Coaches, welcome back to The Hours. This is Mark with Savvy Basketball, and I want to just give you a little context on this week's episode because it's a little different. Instead of Tyler and I or Claire having a basketball conversation, we're actually going to have you sit in on one of our live consulting calls from our Savvy Basketball community. This is one of our favorite ways that we serve coaches because every week we just hop on live and all of our members are invited to hop on and ask questions, ask for feedback or support on anything that they are going through, whether it's the off season or in season. So they ask those questions live and we give feedback and other coaches chime in. It's a great way to build community and connection, but also just get a lot of perspective from coaches that are likely going through some of the same issues or have the same questions as you. And every week, we usually dive into some prepared content that focuses on our monthly mastery. So this month in November, we're diving into practice, how to be a better practice planner, how to execute practice so we get better transfer to games. In fact, in this consulting call that we just had, we didn't even get to the prepared content because there were so many questions around offensive stuff, transition defense, lock left. So I think you're going to like what you hear. We wanted to give you a peek behind the curtain here, because we want to communicate how we serve our members and what you get with our membership. If you're heading into the season and you want this type of support each week, give us a shot. Even if you're on the free trial, you'll get 7 days for free and you'll get one of these consulting calls where you can hop in, see what it's all about, ask your questions, and get live feedback from me, Tyler, and Claire. So, all right, let's dive in. Here's a live look into one of our Savvy Basketball consulting calls. Hope you enjoy. This month, we're diving into obviously November. Everybody is either been going, just started, or about to start practice. So just wanted to open up some space to talk some practice or anything else that you want. So these are laid back, open-ended. Anybody's welcome to come off mute, ask any questions that they want. Oh, Tyler's here. We got the dream team. Good morning.
I brought coffee. I hear that's what we're supposed to do.
I got my call. I thought I was a little late. I was like 2 minutes late because I was making my coffee.
What's up, everybody?
Does anybody want to lead us off with a question around anything that you have, want feedback on or curious about?
I got a question.
Let's do it.
So we just started. We played a game on Tuesday night. And Mark, you saw some of my film as well. And this is our second year. I feel like we get into ISO ball so much. Like we do one action, it doesn't create a big enough advantage, and then we like lose our minds. And I'm trying to figure out how we stack actions on each other without me saying, hey, now do this action, now do this action. And then they don't hear what I'm saying. And like, and it just creates this situation where like, guys, just play basketball. Any thoughts?
Yes. First thought, I'll ask you, what did you think of, I think my big takeaway from the film was you actually were creating big advantages, but we weren't finding the big advantage.
Yeah.
Not sure how that landed for you, but I think, I mean, you're saying we run an action, it creates small advantage, and then we resort to ISO ball. What I saw in the film was actually we were creating big advantages. We just weren't finding it. And that resorted into defense getting back neutral and then us not flowing into an action. So I actually think there's we can tackle the area you're talking about, but I actually would spend a lot of time too is finding the big advantage. That's what the best offensive teams do. As far as small advantage, Tyler was on last night and he shared changing series, right? Like coming down, Rose series has been good for y'all, Ryan coming down in offense, but also y'all are starting with that ball screen as well. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what the trigger is for that. I know the very first possession that I broke down yesterday in the film breakdown was you came down, we could have gone across and got in the rows. We called the big up, got into a ball screen. I don't know if that's something that you're calling, but one thing you could do is just have like a first side, second side, third side. And if y'all start watching the NBA through this lens, it's very similar to what Tyler was talking about. Typically,
I say typically, let's just go through, you can probably picture this possession in your mind watching a professional WNBA or NBA game. First side, maybe we get into a drag ball screen. If that doesn't work, we play through the trail, and that's like a DHO on the backside. So first side drag, second side DHO, third side is usually flash game or what Tyler and I call zoom. And we're lifting the five and we're he's flashing up, she's flashing up, we're hitting and we're playing through that. You could do something very similar. And I'm working with a college coach that's doing exactly that. He's going first side rows, second side ball screen, third side, they're either flashing the five up if they've rolled or hitting the five on a pop and playing DHO from the five. Once they get through that shot clock, there's very little time. So that's kind of the progression they're going. Rose, step up ball screen, playing through the five, either flash or DHO. So that might help playing through sides.
I like that.
I think the only thing I might add to this discussion, because I think it's relevant to everybody, is so Ryan, what I hear you saying is too much ISO ball over dribbling. Is that correct? That's the issue. So I guess I would just, you know, ask a follow-up question. Okay, when they do that, what's the outcome of them doing that? Is the outcome poor shot selection, lots of fives? Is the outcome we just can't create an advantage? Is the outcome we don't get into an action when we would prefer to get into an action? What would you say is like the outcome of that ISO ball?
Yeah, we don't stack actions very well. And so we run one action, and then when it doesn't create what they want to create, guys kind of put their head down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Mark talked about jabs. So I sent that emphasis to our teams. Like, we need to look at our actions more as jabs, as opposed to every time we run an action to be a knockout punch. Mm-hmm. And I think that mindset will help us. And this one, mm-hmm. two side, three sided also assists.
Gotcha. Okay. So when they go isolation, instead of stacking actions, does it usually end up in a shot, or does it end in, oh, I didn't get anything, so I'm going to give up the ball and now we're neutral?
Yeah, I think it turns into bad spacing. It turns into us getting a turnover, forcing a shot.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And so
there's just that feeling of just like out of syncness. What are we doing?
Yeah. So, I mean, the reason I'm asking this is, I think for everybody, this is an issue. This is a basketball issue. This is, we're coaches. This is the issue that we're trying to coach. Okay. So this is not like a unique issue. This is a basketball issue. Players don't see the game the same way that we see the game as coaches. Like, we see, oh, they're neutral, they can stack an action right now. Player sees defense and basket. I want to put ball in basket, right? And so we need to try to find a solution from their kind of first person view. And so, you know, instead of saying, you know, stack actions, which doesn't translate very easily to players, I try to find a way to talk in outcomes and avoid certain outcomes, and then their behaviors will change. So the most common outcome that I see of ISO ball, attacking small gaps, single gaps, when neutral, is fives, is shot selection. So we want them to stack actions. So instead of telling them to stack actions, I instead think that we can constrain and teach shot selection even more, right? And then provide them a tool that they can then relate to shot selection. Because really it comes in the analysis at the end of the possession. Okay, what did we get there? We got a five or a three or some sort of bad shot. Okay, why did we get a bad shot? Oh, because we attacked, you know, without advantage, et cetera. What do we do to not get a five? Okay, let's run more actions and get into actions faster. So if we can kind of connect it to outcomes, second most common outcome that I see in this scenario is what you just said, Ryan, turnovers, right? And a lot of times we're like, oh, we got to make better passing decisions, or we got to be stronger with the ball, or we got to play off 2 feet to not turn the ball over, which is all true. But most solutions can come from backing up one frame. And so really, I think those turnovers come from attacking without advantage. That's what results in us making a bad passing decision because we didn't draw any help. That is what comes when we play off one foot and off balance, right? So I think if we could address those things earlier and like associate those negative outcomes with the behavior change that we want, which is get quicker into an action when you're neutral as opposed to attack, right? Instead of the five, instead of the turnover. Mark?
Yes. Okay. You just hit exactly what I wrote down as you were talking, because you connected it to shot selection, which I thought was really good. And I think we could, you know, we could answer every question with "it depends," but we could also answer every question with spacing before advantage, advantage before shot. Ryan, you said this leads to poor spacing. So it's harder to create an advantage, which typically leads to a turnover or a poor shot. So I would even say what Tyler kind of got to there towards the end was go even one step further and just say, how do we create advantages, and add the constraint of we don't create advantages off the drive when neutral. So we create advantage with action when we're neutral. And a game that Tyler shared with us, I actually linked it in the community today because there was a thread about something very similar, is 3v3 action. I like to run it 4-on-4, which anytime you get neutral or even poor spacing, because when we have poor spacing, we can't create advantage, just call for ball. Whoever has the ball throws it to you, they reshape, you throw it back, and then they get into an action when neutral. That's been really, really valuable for teams going through this same type of growing pains here.
Yeah, and one really practical way to do this, so we know that we is don't put the responsibility on every player. So like every player, when they catch the basketball and neutral, must be able to recognize neutral and trigger an action. Yeah, that would be wonderful. But the fact of the matter is most players don't have the IQ skill set to actually do that. Put it on your best player. And for most of us, that's our racker or our point guard. Like wherever you are on the floor, when you recognize we're neutral and your teammates are about to do something dumb and just pound the ball, run at them, take the ball from them, shape the floor and trigger an action. You know, and like a lot of that goes back to the, you know, the five reads, the five different reads that players can make. Like action is one of the higher level reads. Not every player, in my opinion, is equipped to recognize and trigger actions with neutral yet. We're trying to develop them, right? So wherever you're at, you know, I would just empower that player, like recognize when we're out of shape, have poor spacing, recognize when, you know, someone's going ISO, and go demand the ball from them, shake the floor and trigger it, which is a baby step towards everyone able to flow in and out of neutral and advantage. But I personally would rather us just like burn down the possession and start the possession over than continue to like play, you know, ISO basketball against neutral.
All right. I'm going to share two more related things here. Number one, your trigger can be when the ball gets back to your racker, because I think your racker is really good and he does a really good job of stopping in the world with a stride stop when he doesn't have advantage. Mm-hmm. So that can be the trigger. And then everything Tyler just said, as far as like, hey, just get the ball to the player that can recognize advantage and can get it into an action. Your call for that can just be mayday. And that's something that I've used a lot. We use it at App State with the shot clock. Mayday, mayday, mayday. Like, this is not going well. Let's get everybody organized. It might be get the ball to your racker, have your post set a ball screen for your racker, and the three amigos that are not in the play know exactly where to go and where to space.
Mm-hmm. This is so good, you guys. Thank you so much.
All right, everybody. We'll see you next time. Jake, thanks for joining us 10 seconds ago. Later, man.
And, you know, I think like maybe we as savvy coaches who are trying to teach conceptual offense, like we're reluctant to call mayday because it's so adjacent to set it up and run the play. But I would say don't be reluctant to use training wheels. Like the goal isn't to play in mayday. Like the goal is to take the training wheels off and let them fly. But to get from here to there, you got to have some training wheels. That's how everyone learns. And so mayday or limiting which players can run actions or, you know, whatever, are training wheels. As long as you know where you're going and you're not going to leave the training wheels on for the rest of their life, I think it's great to use training wheels. I think the difference between each of you and many traditional coaches is you want to get past the training wheels. And I think it's, yeah, it's okay to use them to get there.
Yeah, but I don't want to be the only one.
I mean, when you go first, you get the benefit.
Lock left a little bit. We've got a big who I like a lot, but he's not very quick. And so I've tried to install this coverage that we're calling anchor, where he just kind of stays bottom and has to communicate really well. Any tips on how to do that? He doesn't get out well. And when he closes off, we just get all out of sorts. And so when they set a high ball screen, it's easy. We can just shift guys around and then he takes the far free side. But just, is there any tips on how to leave a big just as that bottom all the time in lock left?
Is he number four? I'm looking at your film right here.
No, he's 22.
Yeah. Okay, I see him now. Okay, so when you do set the when his player does go set high ball screen, he stays home like in drop coverage, and then you just kind of rotate up.
Yeah, we send the opposite guards to go handle that screen on that side, and then just move everybody.
How's that working?
It works well in practice when we like have it all set up, oftentimes when we've just had a timeout, we've said that we find him outside the 3-point line.
When it doesn't work well in games, what hurts you? Is it the other players rotating and matching, or is it him rematching?
Yeah, I think it's twofold. One, we just multiple times have no bottom. And so trying to solve that with having one guy who's just, we know, is always bottom. Mm-hmm. And the second one is that, you know, we just get in big time dominoes where we're flying all over the place and they end up in straight line drive.
Yeah. I would love to, I'm flipping through the clips you just sent. I'm not seeing that specific situation a lot in that one. So if you want to send me maybe a couple of clips of that, I could probably give more direct advice and then Mark will flip it to you. But this is, without seeing it, one thought that I would have. It would be, again, a training wheel step to where you want to get to. I might consider, Ryan, not flying around and pre-switching that, but rather just playing 22 in drop coverage and not actually trying to early switch him. So he still would drop back to bottom, but he wouldn't come out in hedge. He wouldn't come out in blitz. He wouldn't come out and switch. He would just, like, I would probably drop him to like nail, knowing that he's backpedaling from the nail on that drop coverage, wherever that high ball screen's happening, until you run into, I think that will work well, until you run into a serious pick and pop threat, which I'm guessing that's not going to be that common at your level, especially if your on-ball defender is weaking the ball and making it go down into the drop coverage. He should be able to drop wall off the rim and then release to the roller and remain the low man or remain the wall. Is that making sense,
yep.
Ryan?
Yep.
Yeah, I think that just eliminates that complexity of flying and rematching on the backside, which, again, would be a wonderful place to get to once you get hurt on a pick-and-pop threat, because we don't want to let that other team get into dominoes and all of that flying around rotation. That does take a lot of time to get good at.
Thank you.
Anything to add to that one, Mark?
Not other than just play a matchup zone near the whole time, but no, I agree. I mean, simplify it, keep them in drop is probably the next step to getting what you want to accomplish.
And shout out, I mean, Ryan, just flipping through these clips, the defense is actually looking really good in these clips that you said. Like, you created a ton of chaos and a ton of turnovers, which is great.
Yeah, and part of it is they're just way more athletic than we were. I felt like it was a D1 team versus a D3 team.
That's what
it reminded me of.
Yeah.
Anyone else?
Okay, I'll go. Every year I come in to the season, we start practice the next Monday, saying, all right, we're going to we're going to work on transition defense this year. Like from day one, we're going to work on it. And then it tends to slip away as other things take more priority. What do you guys think is the best way to install a transition defense, a very simple transition defense system that we can work on, but not have to spend, like, to be able to two-way teach it a ton, where it's just constantly part of just what we're doing. I hope that made sense. I was kind of rambling there, but I want it to be more of a priority, but teach it really simply.
Yep. If you're working transition offense, should be working transition defense. So you talked about two-way teaching it. I would say the first thing that I would ask, and you don't have to answer now, but just what I would ask is, like, what is becoming more important to that? Because we would call that a first order opportunity. Like that, you know, you need transition defense a lot. So let's make sure that list of things that are going to take priority over it are very, very small. They should be other first order opportunities. Second would be connect it to your offensive rebounding system. Right. That way, there's not a disconnect there. I have found teams that struggle in transition don't have a clear system of how they're going to put some, you know, offensive board coverage on there and transition into defense. And then connect it to the inverse, where you talk about two-way teaching, is if we're hunting nines first offensively, how would we take away nines first defensively? And regardless of whatever system you're using, if you make sure that you have somebody on the ball, multiple players on the wall before we defend sevens and match up. It's kind of like the order of operations there. But I would just start there. And I always started installing my transition D with full court, small-sided games, some 4-on-2, some 3-on-2, some 3-on-1, which gives you the opportunity to start to install that. And then I'm going to take a – I'll share the last thing, and then Tyler probably has something for us. I'll take a non-traditional approach here. Most coaches probably start with transition defense, and I used to. I actually think there's a lot of value in teaching your defense in the half court first and then connecting that to full court defense. So if we can make sure we always have a ball and a wall in the half court, and we can make sure that we understand our close-offs and our rotations in the half court, all that transfers much faster to transition D. And I found it's just easier to teach in the half court and transfer to full court rather than try to teach in the full court without them having the context of the half.
Yeah. Okay. Agree with everything Mark said. And with like on all these things, I would encourage every coach listening live and recorded, don't attempt to do all of the pieces of advice, but each individual piece of advice might resonate or fit into what you're already doing better for Jake or for Nicole or for Dave or whatever. So each of these things, like pick one and think, I think we'll get the most out of this one and apply it. Don't try to apply all of them. But I do think that each situation is different and things resonate with different people. So three small specific ways that I think you can improve transition defense. I'll be quick. We played when I was still coaching college basketball, we played UCLA when they had Kevin Love and Russell Westbrook on the team. And they were way better than us. We were mid-major with Portland State. Transition offense for them was really good. Kevin Love is getting defensive rebounds, throwing these outlet passes to Russell Westbrook, who's faster and more athletic than everybody, and he's dunking. So it was probably the best transition offense. And we prepared for this. Et cetera, et cetera. We're down, first half, we're down like 20-something points. We're just getting killed in transition. And so we have our little coaches powwow before we go in to talk to the players at halftime, and everyone's like, we cannot send anyone to the offensive glass. We are all five sprinting back in the second half. We're getting killed, et cetera, right? And our head coach is just like stressed out. And I remember I was a younger coach at the time, and I just said, I disagree. I said, I think we need to send five to the offensive glass and put a lot of pressure off. Like, we're like, Kevin Love's getting every rebound without having to box out already because we're getting back. And then he has like free reign to just scope and snipe these passes. I'm like, we need to apply offensive rebounding pressure, and we need to pressure the rebounder, specifically Kevin Love. And so he can't throw these long outlet passes, right? And our head coach decided, he's like, we're going to do it. And so we shipped in the second half. We sent all five to the glass. And if you know, anyone that was attacking the offensive glass, if their player got the defensive rebound, immediate and intense ball pressure. And we had much more success in the second half. We played them pretty even. We still lost by 20-something points. But that was like the first time in my life where I was like, okay, and this is the first tip. Increase, one thing you can do is increase offensive rebounding pressure. Mark already said it's connected to your offensive rebounding plan. I actually think if people have to box out, and if you're attacking the glass, it slows down their ability to release and run, is one. Like, put that. So increase offensive rebounding commitment and pressure. Two. Okay, I'll do this one next. Early ball pressure, which is related, but I'm speaking more to their point guard and outlet. Most teams, and this is obviously just directly out of the lock left playbook, most teams do have someone, a point guard, they're looking to outlet the ball to. Don't let them. Like, designate someone, whether it be a matchup or a position, to deny the outlet. Like, deny, that will buy you 3 to 4 seconds, 2 to 3 seconds, right? Deny the outlet, and then have, don't just run back and sit in the paint. Be on the ball. Make that ball handler make a move, like one drill move, to at least beat that person before they can just throw the ball up ahead. So that'd be two, increase ball pressure. Three, this is around offensive spacing. If you can prioritize filling action spots or the slots throughout your offensive possession, you're going to have better floor balance to actually get back and build a wall. If the action spots are vacant when you attempt a shot, it's going to be really hard to get back. If players are staying in the corners and not blasting up to action spots, on shot attempts, on penetration, on, you know, when the ball goes to the other side of the floor, it really hurts floor balance. I found there's a significant correlation between always having the two action spots filled and defensive floor balance in transition. So those would be three small things. You could pick one and it'll probably impact your defensive transition.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
All right. We have time for one more if anybody wants to jump in here.
So I'm just really grateful for this. I think my plan has been in the past, I just need to install more actions. Like, we just need more actions. So I think we're up to like 15 or 16 different actions that we are talking through and reminding what they look like. We just put in WIP this week and now I'm thinking I'm doing this wrong. Would you, any advice as I try to figure out again how to get our offense a little bit more free flowing and movement action based, of how to help my players understand? Like, again, after the game, I was like, I don't think anybody even knows more than fingers and fan. Like, that's all we ever do is fingers and fan. And every time out, so I'm just looking for clarity and moving forward. We play again tomorrow. What would be the best way to like simplify? Like, I thought, should I have flashcards on the side, like as they're coming down the court, and say, here's the action that we're going to run this time? Because they know them. But in the heat of the moment, it's fingers and fan, fingers and fan, fingers and fan. Anyway, I don't know if it's the same question I asked before, but I'm just trying to, what's my next step in clarity to helping us progress as a team?
I do think it's really related to what we talked about before.
Okay.
And the fact that let's recognize neutral and recognize that neutral needs action. And I'm not as concerned with like, hey, all we do is fingers or fan, because if the ball is in the action spot and your post player is in the porch or the dunker spot, that is what you should be in. So I think that's good. I think I would be more concerned if you're like, hey, we practice fingers and fan, but they only run fingers. So the fact that you're running both of those allows you to be a little bit more multiple. And I would say what I see when watching your film, it's fingers, fan, and ball screen. So you do have that third one in there. And I would just spend time of like, how well do we execute these actions? You know, like, what can we do better in fingers to create advantages? Why are we not creating advantages in fingers? A lot of what we said in the film breakdown last time was a lot of the end of possessions to me was more skill than actual action. It was one, finding big advantage, but also two, there was a lot of times where we drove, we stride stopped and traveled, or we drove, we kicked and, you know, ball was stolen. So I don't know that it's, I would just look at it through a skill lens as well and not just okay, we're struggling to score points, so it has to do with our actions. It could be the application of skill within the offense.
Awesome. So what I heard is let's zero in on what we're doing well so far and get better at those simple things as opposed to just adding more.
Yeah, and I'll give you one quick one for your team just based on the last few film breakdowns is let's get the ball clicking a little bit better instead of every action leads to drive and kick. I would say if I'm scouting your team, you create advantages off drive and kick, whether it's fingers, fan, or ball screen. Like, what else do we have? Could we go blast series where I know that'd be installing something?
We have that.
Yep. Yeah, I just don't see it though. Yep. Right. So it might be something you already have installed, but we just have to get better at it. And like we said with training wheels, it's every dead ball, we're in blast instead of rows.
Hmm.
You know, and then that is the training wheel. The more that they run that in the game with your help, with your call, the more comfortable they get. And then you connect the action to the trigger. No hunt out of the action spots. Well, does my teammate need help or space? If we're hunting, ball player with ball hunt nines, everybody else hunt space. If the ball is not hunting a nine, if it can't, now it needs help, then come help, blast up, and now we got another series.
Mark, I have some ideas. Care to guess how many?
Three.
You're right. I got three ideas for it. Here we go. okay. So, hopefully like grab some of these or don't. When I was still playing basketball a few years ago, I played a lot of three-on-three tournaments. One of my teammates, is a guy by the name of Daniel Alexander, played professionally for a long time in Australia, 6'8", shooter, just like so good. We're playing this tournament and we're struggling. We call timeout and he's heated. And he's like, guys, because our offense wasn't working, we weren't scoring. He's like, guys, Mark, care to guess what he told us?
Pass me the ball.
Exactly. He's like, I got to touch the ball. He's like, why are we shooting before I touch the ball? Right. And he didn't like say in an arrogant way, but it's true. Like he was the best player on our team. He's like, you guys are like trying to create. He's like, you have me. We don't take a shot unless I touch the ball. That's why we're not scoring. And like, I feel like that's often the answer, and it's the open gym playground answer. But a lot of times in, you know, structured games, it doesn't have like your best player must touch the ball when there's not an obvious advantage in transition or in dominoes. Like get the ball back to your best player. Why is someone other than your best player running the action? And so I think just like raising a team's awareness of that will increase the level of advantage you get off of said action or whatnot. And it also just generates a little more ball movement. If me as the second or third best player, I'm trying to dribble against isolation, the simple just social answer is get the best player the ball. We'd rather them do that crappy thing than you. So that's one. Just like make sure they always know who your primary point of attack is. And it needs to be articulated from the coach to the entire team. Mark is our best player. Like when you don't have a nine in transition or a kick out seven, get the ball back to Mark so we can run our action. And that's just a real simple fix that you can do without drilling it because everybody knows who the best player is. Second, Ryan, for you specifically or other people's, like stack an action on an action that they already run a lot and well. So you said they run fingers and fan well. Fan. Okay, so what's the stacked action on fan? Just because I know we want to give them a different look. So when we're in fan, we're actually going to fan into step up or fan into whatever, right? So, I mean, I know, Mark, who is the Alaskan coach that has run your stuff forever. Anyway, I know like they would.
Anderson.
Yes. They would follow fan right into like a follow screen from, right? So then just say, okay, when we run fan, we're not just running fan, because if we run fan and they've got a straight line drive, they're going to take it. They're not going to wait for the second action, right? But if fan doesn't give us a big domino or a big advantage, we know that fan is coming into a follower step up screen or chin or whatever. Just stack those actions on an action your team's already running, especially if that action your team's already running isn't getting you big advantages. Just strip your second action. So that's a real easy way to install training wheels onto that as well. Last, and I feel like every team must do this, and most teams are not doing this, just click and mix. like click and mix isn't an action. Click and mix, I think, is spacing before advantage, advantage before shot. So if we are, if we're neutral, I actually wouldn't, let's say four is not one of our best players and we're neutral right here. Okay. I would rather them just click and mix than try to run a Rose Series action. A click and mix is just move the ball, click the ball quickly if you're neutral. And then mix is just exchange with this player on the far side. Just click and mix. And a lot of times that can generate a little bit more ball movement and small advantages and get your primary player, primary point of attack up into an action spot a little bit more, right? Same thing, like just include that other look of just click and mix. And I think that can create a lot more dominoes and small advantages than running even necessarily actions. I think I would install mix, click and mix before I would another action.
This Ryan, is thanks for being such an active participant today, because everything that you have asked, every single coach goes through. So really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
This is awesome. I'm going to rewatch this multiple times.
Yeah. Hey, Ryan, I was actually going to say too, watch Tyler's live training from last night. It's in the classroom under live trainings, under the practice planning. I'll link it for everybody and just create a post so everybody knows where to find it. But it basically talked about creating through lines, and your through line is going to be actions when neutral, actions when neutral, actions when neutral. So, all right. Successful coffee with Mark. Appreciate everybody being coffee with Tyler, Mark, and Claire.
See you guys tomorrow morning.
Yes. See y'all.
Thanks.